This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Tech Thursday. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and joining me in the studio is the team from Digital News Asia without the main man. He's apparently on the way. Mm-hmm. Karam, if you're listening, please. Yes. I'm joined here with Anusha Kandasivam, Chon Jin Seung, and also we've got a new voice, which is Zof Asmi. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning.
So let's talk about Digirati 50, because I realize this is on your site already. People can now download the latest edition of Digirati 50, which is highlighting 50 entrepreneurs that you guys feel deserve a mention, a shout out. So a bit of a refresher, what exactly is this Digirati 50? It's every 2 years. The last time we've seen this was 2 years ago, right?
Yep. Yeah, so Digirati 50 is our pick of the top 50 entrepreneurs that we feel are shaping the Malaysian tech ecosystem. Mm. So there's a wide breadth of different personalities, from your big CEOs down to the startups that are, you know, doing something that we may not be seen, but you know, we have to dig them out. And yeah, I think I speak for the three of us that it's our first time doing Digirati 50.
Was this exciting?
Yeah. It was exciting because for me, at least, it was a chance to kind of think about all the people that I've seen over the past 2 years and think about what kind of potential I think they have and whether they deserve to be in Digirati 50. And the thing is, they may not make it all the way to and become a unicorn or something, but there is some potential there. So it's up to them, I guess, whether they work hard at it and actually make even more of a success out of themselves. Mm.
And so you've been in the journalist field for a number of years as well now, right? This is not something new for you. But what of the things that you learned a lot in terms of finding out for this, you know, 50 entrepreneurs? Because it's a very elite kind of field in that sense, right?
Well, my history is rather mixed because I was working with what is now known as MDEC, and in those days known as MDC, way back when they started up, before they moved to Cyberjaya. Mm. So when I started writing again for DNA, you know, it was, and I started talking to these entrepreneurs again, I could feel the same spirit that I mean, obviously, the entrepreneur in Malaysia today and entrepreneur in Malaysia in 97 are quite different.
Yeah.
But what really excited me was that all of them were very enthusiastic about what they did. Mm-hmm. And all of them seemed quite down to earth when we talked to them about the thing that they cared about. Mm-hmm. And I think it was partly our job to try to figure out what was that thing that got them excited and passionate. Mm-hmm. You'll see that the individuals that we selected for the Digirati, a large number of them are entrepreneurs sort of starting their journey. Not every single one, but a lot of them are.
Most of them, yeah.
And I think Karam was quite keen to make it clear that we were trying to highlight this exciting side of the Malaysian IT scene rather than going to an established large company and say, okay, you know, what are your plans for the next financial year? It wasn't that angle. We wanted to unearth and show, look, this is what's possible in Malaysia.
It's also trying to dig into the minds of these individuals themselves, right? It's not just about the company about what they do, but more about their thinking process, their thought process.
So our usual stories on our website will be about the company and what they're doing and their financials and everything. But this one was getting into the mind of the entrepreneur, asking them, how did you start out? What was it like? What did you feel? Mm. You know, that kind of thing. So that was really interesting to meet all kinds of different people.
Making those tough decisions, whether, you know, it's pivoting or firing someone or, you know, rehiring people, those you know, pain points that they had. So I guess people can now download it off from the website itself.
You can download it from the website.
And there you still can get it on Focus Malaysia, though I think today is the last day for that issue.
Yeah. Today is the last day for the issue, so you have to go out and get your copy of Focus Malaysia to get the soft copy, the physical copy,
the hard copy. Or if you can find Karim Jade, you can hunt him down.
he carries a stack of them in his boot. Is that
he does.
You sound like you're joking.
It's true.
No. We don't joke on this show. We may laugh about it, but it's actually true. Yeah. So let's pick out, Anu, let's pick out your three and why those three. You've had Ramesh Balakrishnan from iResidence. Mm-hmm. You've got Reza Fahmy from Silent Mode. And then you've got Vic Sedasadan and Janet Teo of Hyperlab.
Yeah.
What about those three that, you know, picked your interest in that sense?
Well, like Zof said just now, these three, I feel, are doing something that not very many people in Malaysia are doing. Mm. And maybe you could consider them first movers, or even if they're not a first mover, okay, for example, like Ramesh. Ramesh is from iResidence, mm-hmm. and which is a property management platform.
Mm.
So he's not the it's not the first property management platform in Malaysia. It's not the only one, but it has the biggest market share. And it's because the reason it has that biggest market share is because of the way he's approached it, the aggressive market acquisition that he's been doing, the value-added services that he provides, which made people sit up and think like, hey, actually, this could be something that could work for me. And yeah, so...
But it's interesting in the sense that this all wouldn't have happened in the beginning itself,
yeah.
right?
So, now, I spoke to him like 2 or 3 times before, but this time when I spoke to him, I really dug into it. He was maybe slightly reluctant to tell me. I guess because he's moved past that point in his life already. Yeah. But he said he almost gave up. He literally almost gave up. He had the idea and he founded iResidence in 2013, but it took him 2 years to get it going, really. There was a lot of hills that he had to climb, and one of the biggest one was funding. And he tried for grants, he tried for investments, and it was almost impossible to get. And he said at one point, and at that point he had a family, he had a wife and one child already. Mm. He has 2 now. And it was really difficult when you have children, you have a young family, you need to support them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said he almost gave up, and he was really, from what he told me, he was really down in the dumps and thinking, what am I doing with my life?
But that's the entrepreneur spirit that we always want to highlight and share. Like, you know, it's nice sometimes when we report about stories of, you know, getting X amount of million of dollars of funding or expansion plans. But, you know, it's very rare that we actually talk about that pain point moments that they had and, you know, and how they persevered through. And then for Silent Mood, they started off as well, like, you know, trying to do so many different things, and now they've hit the nail on the spot.
Yeah. So Silent Mode now is best known for its cloud-based point of sale for the F&B industry. It's called Slurp with an exclamation mark. So but when they first started, Reza Fahmi Razali, he's the CEO and founder, he told me that they were so excited to be in the business. They had really good tech experts and people writing software for them, and they made so much software and tried to sell it off. So they actually started, you know, those things in the restaurants where you order on your tablet? You sit at your table and you order on your tablet. But so they wanted to do that because they thought, oh, that's the way things are going in Malaysia. But then realized that it doesn't really work except in a Japanese restaurant. So because Malaysian consumers are just not like that. it's strange. So their thing was they didn't do enough market research. They were just so excited to see like, oh, this technology, you know, we can make it work, but they didn't realize that they couldn't. So after that, he said he slowed down. He became a thinker, basically. He decided that he would do more research, learn everything he could before going into something new, which has worked for them amazingly because they are the ones that are really pushing cloud-based POS systems in Malaysia. And they're the ones who are at the forefront of educating the market about cloud-based systems.
And then Hyperlab, they're doing some AI related.
So AI is always exciting, right? And Hyperlab is one of the first few people to actually do AI chatbots and voice bots. So I challenge anyone to tell me anyone else who's doing that in Malaysia. I'm sure there are, but you know, who knows about them? Yeah, so in that sense, they're kind of like one of the first movers. and they themselves told me that they are betting that the future will be very automated. So they are ready for it. So they saw that there is an opportunity there and they went for it.
Right.
Yeah. And they actually have their own IPs because they've created all this technology, including AI that has natural language processing, it all to improve customer experience, things like that. So obviously, it's such a great thing that they decided they needed an IP.
Had fun interviewing all those three entrepreneurs?
Yeah.
Four entrepreneurs.
I kind of cheated a little bit. Because for Hyperlab, it's Vic Sithasanen and Janet Teo. And I really wanted to get Janet in because we really do have very little female entrepreneurs in here.
No, but not really, you know, because this is the...
Oh, well, he's here.
I've been here since the beginning.
It's like Teleporter.
No, you all gave some irrelevant information out to our listeners. No, but look, this is the what I'm really pleased about is that we've got seven, you know, entrepreneurs and technocrats in here, which is the most number ever. So it's fantastic.
Seven females, you mean?
Yeah, seven
but,
females.
But, you know, still out of 50.
Hopefully, yeah. So these seven will inspire.
Inspire
you
know, people.
Yes. Yeah. You got to start from somewhere. So we didn't have too many in the first two, which I brought those issues here also. But it's a great foundation to build on. And the next one is going to be the classic 2020 issue, just by virtue of timing, it's going to be super special. So we're going to work towards that too.
All right. Since Karam is here, we're going to take a short break while we set. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to a very busy Tech Thursday today because now we have four guests on the show. So boys, behave. Anushka, Anusha, just it's all right. I'm just talking about the boys here only, especially.
I'm always well
behaved. Let's move on to Jin. Your three picks for Digirati 50. You had the Lorry, Carsem, and Telecontinent. What about these three that really picked your interest?
Correct, I'm curious too.
I picked these guys mainly because like I found that they had interesting stories. Most of them come out from start from ground zero, upper, and I think all three of them have really big expansion plans coming out. After I spoke to them, I was quite impressed at like how they're going. And even like for example, Carsem, the CEO, I talked to the CEO and co-founder Eric Chang. And recently, last week, they raised a Series B. It was of $19 million.
Right. So the story was done before. Obviously, interviews were done before. You know, we knew this was the money. They raised the money.
Like. Yeah. Is an oracle that he keeps.
No,
around.
I don't. But yeah, it's interesting because like you wouldn't think that. I mean, most Malaysian startups, I think the most difficult part is trying to think of how you're going to like get off the ground over here, let alone thinking about going regional. But these guys have like been at the game so long that they've really moved past that already, and now they're really thinking on a regional scale. And that's the same thing also for the Lorry.
The Lorry, yeah.
Yeah. So these guys, they started out here. All of them actually have picked out things that no one has actually looked at before or didn't see an opportunity.
Never thought about it, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't see an opportunity, but now they're really like, they're picking out and they're really in multiple countries in Singapore, Indonesia. You know, these are not small operations that you have to. And the Lorry themselves, they call themselves the Uber for lorries. Yeah. They're trying to make, you know, connect the dots for people who are trying to transport things on a larger scale basis, not just moving cars only, you're moving goods. So, I mean, I found it really interesting that, you know, they try to, like they told me that they're trying to target niche areas. Like, for example, in Singapore, they're coming as, you know, as a maybe the second or third entrant already in. So people already established themselves already. So how are they going to approach it? Obviously, not going to bang their heads against the wall against, you know, what the establishments already have.
Yeah.
But just go to niche areas and find what the others are not doing and let's address that. So I find that it's like a good strategy on their part.
So Carsem is the rental car sharing platform.
No, they are not. They are,
the Lorry, that's the Lorry. Lorry is the rental,
is
no rental,
rental
car.
For the lorries.
Correct.
Right?
Carsem is more Carsem selling a second-hand car platform.
Right.
So basically, if you're going to sell a car or something, you don't have to like, usually like when you want to trade in your car and stuff like that, it's usually a tedious process. Yeah. So Eric Chang at the time, he thought like, let's make a platform for buying and selling. Mm. But he found that people want to sell their cars more than they want to buy cars. So he drilled down, refocused himself to be a car selling platform for secondhand car sales.
And Telecontinent was the third choice in your, and who are they? What do they do?
Telecontinent, they started as a BPO business and they still are a BPO business, but the twist is that instead of just focusing on your regular BPO and stuff, they focused on the Mandarin-speaking crowd because they found that for some of the services, whether it's your Astro or your Maxis or anyone who has a services platform behind it that you have to serve a certain customer base, most of them will be talking in English and there'll be a certain segment of the market that will not be comfortable speaking in it. So they identify that, hey, okay, there's this part here. Why don't we try serving it in BPO style but focus on the Mandarin speaking base instead? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they saw, you know, increase, they're able to help their I mean, the confidence that they had, especially from their clients in Singapore, was, you know, validation that, you know, this is actually, you know, an underserved market that they identified.
Mm. And credit to Jusri Ong, right, the CEO. So I love this kind of cross-cultural opportunity because Jusri Ong is a Chinese, you know, by he's a Muslim convert, but he's a Chinese ethnic. So he then, you know, saw this opportunity in the market there, you know, which is superb.
What is it about the individual journey of this? What do you think made them, you know, successful into where they are at this point of time? Like, from these three that you have, surely there were some similarities that you spot out when you...
By the way, none of them or DJ 15, they're successful yet. Because they aspire higher, right? Fantastic. Yeah. You've got to be continually hungry and want to improve, right? Raise the bar.
I think it's on the right note. Definitely, they're all hungry.
Correct.
And definitely, all of them have faced adversities in it. For example, like the lorry guys, they started out picking out the you know, the papans on the cheese and everything.
That's the way we know of you know, getting
it's
a lorry
still,
to sell this out.
Still,
they called those guys and hardly anyone picked up. So like they had to start from they had to grow their user base from there, you know, calling up these guys from the papans on the trees and then trying to get them on board. So few came out, but slowly they built the user base from there. People were like, oh, you know, I'm getting good returns from the lorry and then, you know, they build up the driver base. While at the same time for Carson, Eric, like I said, he started out trying to do a buying and selling platform. When they tried to go both ways, they said, like, why don't we go for selling? Because like there's definitely a better opportunity over there, and focus it towards, you know, building a base where, you know, people can come and sell their cars and come and check at their checkpoints and everything. So much so that secondhand car salesmen, they don't even see the cars, so they trust them so much that, you know, based on what their checks have done, I believe this is the stats of the cars that I'm going to be getting, and I'll buy it off that without even seeing it. Then,
so I think this is huge before I forget, because, you know, it's incredible. They got into the game thinking, you know, the model is going to be such, but then they changed the model to just, let's just help people sell their cars. And then, voila, all of a sudden, without realizing, second-hand car dealers appreciated what they do because, you know, they're doing the QC, right? So the car is there. The price is fixed. There's no haggling. So then all the second-hand car dealers come in and, you know, and bid on that, whether they want to bid up or whatever. So the process is smoother. So they didn't figure that they would be solving a problem for the second-hand car dealers. Ended up being, hey, that's where our key value proposition is. And that's a problem that can be scaled. You think second-hand car dealers in Singapore, Indonesia, or Thailand don't have the same problem, right? Because buyers are going to shop, right? You go to him, you spend time with the dealer, half an hour there and say, okay, I'll come back later. Then you're gone. And he's wasted his time, right? So this amazing pain point that they came across because they got into the game. They had the guts to say, we're going to be entrepreneurs, leave our jobs and, you know, try to solve a pain problem. The problem you solved wasn't what you thought would be there. And then suddenly you came across this beautiful story here. That's one of the lessons you learn. But it all starts with you being crazy and brave enough to say, let's let it all hang out, right? Let's take a risk.
Zof, let's move on to your picks for Digirati 50. You had Thomas Yip, and then Prabhupada Seth, and also Sharla X Reed. What about those three? Again, probably just a brief intro about those three again.
Well, the reason why I picked those three was that I felt that when I was... I mean, you can only squeeze 700 words into each of these profiles, but not each of them actually had much, much more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And part of the reason why I picked those three was to sort of... I mean, consider this an addendum to the article. And I mean, there was so much more about them which we couldn't add in. For Thomas Yip, the thing that stands out, I mean, when he first met me, the first question he asked was, I mean, literally, do you think a software house from Ipoh can build software that's as good as what Google builds? Yeah. And it kind of took me off guard when he asked me that question.
He's asking you.
And then for the next half hour, he proceeded to, I mean, quite animatedly and excitedly. Again, I can't quite capture this in the article, but demonstrate this new product that he was doing. And he was, I mean, very convincing. And then I played around with it as well. So what his software house does is he built a product to draw electrical diagrams for engineers. So if you're building a building, you have to have someone sort of draw out where all the plug points and the light points have to go. And that's what his product is. And he says the reason why he built it was they had a tender for a project like 15 years ago. And they realized that existing software didn't do the job very well. So they actually built the software for themselves first. And then... when they didn't win the tender,
they were left. They were stuck.
They were stuck with the software, which is a lot. Mm. Oh, actually, this software isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think this is a theme that Karam may pick on later, is that they couldn't sell the software in Malaysia. Yeah. He had all these friends who were engineers within Malaysia, but nobody in Malaysia seemed to want. And again, this is something that's not in an article, but he alluded the fact that he thought that maybe his friends could get the commercial software cheaper and freer through other channels.
No, but significant. Everyone listening, look at that. You know, do you think engineers all over the world didn't have the same problem, that they realize, hey, you know, the existing software doesn't help us when, you know, figure out the electrical, you know, diagram of a building, right? The software just doesn't do your job. But every other engineer in the whole world decided just to complain about it. Here you have, you know, Thomas Yip, my fellow Ipohite, you know, although I'm from Penang, sort of born in Ipoh, so I take some credit
everything.
There. Claim everything.
Yeah.
Claim everything.
I can tell you it's the Ipoh Hor Fun.
Ipoh Hor Fun.
that is the secret sauce to, you know.
Man, I didn't have, you know, I left Ipoh too young, so I'm Penang food fan.
It's not the Penang Char Kway Teow, it's the Ipoh Hor Fun.
Which is no problem. But the amazing, right? He decided to solve the problem and came up with the software. Mm. And then, you know, put it out there. And the whole world, their customers are including NASA.
NASA, so, IBM, NASA, yeah. I think Apple, Google,
JPL, Apple.
JPL, yes. Yeah,
incredible achievement by Thomas Yip and Radhika Software. Just remember the name. Remember these names. Remember all these guys in Digirati. Because they're incredible people, worthwhile. And this is just the third batch, right? We've got two other batches before that. Just go to our homepage and you can download the current version of Digirati also.
Yep.
Absolutely worth your time. And this is a two-year product, so you can take your time to read them, get to know them, appreciate them, and try to emulate them. It's crazy.
The second one you had, Prabodh.
So the interesting about Prabodh is that when he describes his product, it sounds very simple. His product is that he says he can help you save money by making your air conditioning more efficient. And it sounds so straightforward. Now, he's not talking about the air conditions like you have in the room here, these 2 horsepower things. You know, he's talking about air conditions that cool entire buildings.
Industrial, yeah.
And industrial air conditions, right? Mm. And the way they do it, and this is stuff I learn when I do these interviews, right? the way they do it is that they cool down water and then they blow air over the water. Now, it seems it's not easy to guess how much you have to cool down the water by to get the right temperature for the building.
Yeah.
And he says what most buildings, and it's not just a problem in Malaysia, what most buildings tend to do is that they tend to overcool it, which results in commercial buildings which are too cold.
Right. Yeah. Which is why Singapore is the world's coldest city, you know, indoors, right?
and his value proposition is very simple. He installs sensors throughout the building. They measure the environment. They do a bit of prediction, a bit of fuzzy logic to figure out what the temperature will be in half an hour's time or an hour's time. And then they tune the cooling of the water to change the temperature. It's such a simple idea.
Correct.
And yet, again, it's a tough sell at the moment.
And he won a global recognition,
yes.
Right?
In and Silicon he won a global he won global recognition. So this is an idea and he went all the way to Silicon Valley and
Green Tech Competition.
That's right.
They were the winners, man.
And yet, when he comes back here to Malaysia to pitch the idea, he says there's a lot of skepticism.
Yeah, sure not. Puchong address, Puchong.
But that's the problem. Also, same with Thomas Yip from what's the company?
Radhika Software.
Radhika Software, right? So it's the same thing as well. So it's just that somehow, you know, we've got great minds here and they seem to create great softwares or platforms or a solution to something, but we tend to judge on, like, you know, where's this office? Is it Ipoh? You know, like, how many people is in this office? Yeah. 3 people? You know, it's not too
great.
That perception needs to change now because the
it
world
needs to be broken. Yeah, we need to hammer it and bury it, man.
I mean, I will tell you something about Radhika Software, which is because they have their client base for Electra, which is their electrical engineering drawing program, is in the thousands, which doesn't sound like a very large installation base. But the licensing for each of these pieces of software, a perpetual license, is $2,000.
Wow.
And their software company only has 8 people. So do the maths.
So LHDN, do the math too.
This is a great... maybe I shouldn't have said that. but this is a great example of finding your niche and then maximizing productivity within that niche, which is what everyone should try.
His new product, we got the name wrong. What is the actual
Vector
name?
So, unfortunately, in the article, it was he has a new product which isn't out yet. It's only in beta testing. It's a product, he calls it, if you know this software called Visio. So he says Visio mixed with Google Docs. It allows you to draw diagrams with other people around the world. Mm. So, and it is in real time. So as you change the diagram on your machine in Ipoh, a guy in Sweden,
Siberia
will see the diagram change in real time.
Wow.
And this is something called Vector. Mm. He already has, he's only on a test case at the moment, pilot at the moment. And he already has, I think he claimed he has 1,500 registered users for that.
Wow.
His plan is within the next 3 or 4 years to raise that customer base to like 1 million.
Mm.
Wow.
And finally, very quickly, Sharala X-Reed, she returned back from Malaysia and then she started. Now she's the...
So Sharala X-Reed, if the other two we were talking about, them having to sort of prove themselves overseas before they made it in Malaysia, Sharala is an example who proved herself overseas and then come back to Malaysia. And normally what happens is that you prove yourself overseas in a certain industry and then you come back in the same
industry.
Right? Trying to build on that. Yeah.
But she didn't do that. So her history is that she used to be a telco engineer. She was installing the 3G networks for local telco companies. And then she got so good at that is then she then graduated, become a trainer. And then she got good at that she was a trainer in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then she already established like a training company in Europe to teach how to do telecommunications. And obviously from 3G graduated to other more cutting edge technologies. And then she got married. And then she said she found her dream home in Gothenburg in Sweden. And the passion which she talked about finding this dream home, like she stayed there for an hour absorbing the atmosphere of this new house that they eventually bought, right? And then her husband, who's Swedish, said, we should go back to Malaysia. And she comes back to Malaysia not to build training in telco industry, which is her expertise, because she says there were a lot of that training already happening in Malaysia. Mm. So she felt, I mean, there wasn't much value to add. And so she spent 9 months discussing with her team of new cutting-edge industries or technologies. And she finally zeroed in on data analytics because she says there's a lot of potential in Malaysia and there's a lot of hope there. So her company now, The CADS, what they do is they give training on how to be good at big data, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting.
And it's also, there's a partnership with ADEX as well, because you know, she was also part of ADEX before, and then now with the CADS, Center of Applied Data Science, right?
Yes. Yeah, so. And also working, I believe, with MDEC and with various
ADEX. Through MDEC, they created ADEX, so they're running it. You know, I was there yesterday.
And they've got the City Brain project that they're coming out again, more data.
It's just lots of things going on. Yeah, they had a big GLC, which is, you know, not a very interesting company among all the GLC, but they came and they wanted to learn a bit more, explore about data. So everyone realizing there's great value in data and they're learning more. And ADEX has become like a hub for everyone to come here. Knowledge hub, let's learn and share from each other. Brilliant.
Karam, you're next, but we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
We're back with Tech Thursday with the crew from Digital News Asia. Karam, before we highlight your three picks for Digital
News. I'm going to try to get in six, by the way.
Only three are allowed. But your founder's note from the previous two editions, you could actually just swap them around and it would still make sense in today's day.
Isn't that just crazy? Yeah? Because the first one...
Crazy,
you're right,
or you're predicting the future in some sense?
No. Because I also, really, they're kind of generic, but they fit because the first one was about 50 to be inspired by, right? So these people are inspiring. And then the second one that was our 2016-2017 edition was, you know, Malaysia's got, you know,
it
talent. Malaysia's IT, got talent, right? We've got talent in IT, so Malaysia's got it. And this current one is aiming to be winners. You know, you could interchange them and it will still be relevant. Fantastic. That's what they're all trying to be, right? Winners. You know, and they're people I think we should admire. They're doing, you know, interesting stuff despite the odds. You know, no fear, right? Just want to punch through that wall because we think, you know, that's the way to go. And then also, you know, we've got talent, right? This incredible talent. Because you cannot build these kind of businesses here if you don't have the talent. So, you know, bringing in co-founders and all that, and technical skills and marketing skills, you know, growth hacking, it's all there. And not enough maybe, but it's there.
And the three that you had, they all three are very different. There's a social enterprise, there's an education sector, and then there's this, you know, the large digital player that we feel, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
Tell us about
maybe social enterprise. I think because I love listening to Rashvin Pal Singh and Gurpreet Dhillon Singh because, you know, they were sitting down and they said, you know, we're tired of talking. We want to be the change that we think should happen in Malaysia. I mean, you know, at their age, when they were saying this, they were like 26 years old, right? How many 26 years old, you know, with good education say that, right? Not happy. And they're not happy with the state of the economy. They think business models are wrong. Companies are too inward-looking. That's crazy, right? They then leave and decide to do something in the social BGBG they launch, right? It's just amazing.
And now with your new space, the Mareka space.
So, you know, five years later now they've opened up Mareka, which is, I think, right now probably the best, you know, maker space in the country, right?
Really?
And credit to the people in Publica who saw that and say, hey, we'll give you this space for a really good rate and come and do your crazy stuff. And I've been there. They've got amazing stuff. You can go with your kids, even adults, and you can learn. They will teach you to repair and to fix things, right? They've got this amazing 3D printer, you know, which you can take your phone or any device, and you'll actually, you know, a laser engraver, actually, right? Engraver. And it will engrave even your face on your phone if you want to. Extend. So they're doing amazing. They want to just change Malaysia and mold it to the way they think it should be. And how many young kids even think of doing that, right? At great, you know, cost and expense to them because it's not been easy. They've got like over 30 over headcount now and you've got to meet those payrolls every month. Just don't want to take no and say we think we can do it. And they've gone through a lot. They're a really inspiring story. Otherwise, they wouldn't have come out. So it's guys like this that you want to bring out, right? And make known to the whole world out there, to all Malaysians.
They also have a campaign on pitching at this point in time.
Exactly. So if thanks for it. Just coincidentally, because we didn't know this when we, you know, when we spoke to them. They've got a campaign in pitching, which is probably going to go live any day now, right? So just but they're using their company. They're using Mareka. So they share, their makerspace is called Mer.reka, right? Which is cool. Very creative.
Love the word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's almost, you look at it and you think of Merdeka, right? But it's Mareka. It's create. And you can be part of
and
the upside journey.
Mareka, which is, you know, me create.
Yeah, me. Yeah, me Reka also.
It just plays so many things. That,
So look at it. The me is English, right? Yeah, I'm just looking at it as the Malay word Mareka. Yeah, so you're right. So they're so creative of them, right? And that's what they embody, right? Creativeness, out-of-the-box thinking. If you guys, you know, want problems, your solutions, go and see them. If you're lucky enough to get their time, they'll just give you some crazy ideas and for you to go and you know, make a difference, you know.
And then you've got Dr. Parmit Singh.
Ah, yeah.
From APU.
So he's the CEO for Asia Pacific University, right? So he's been involved in education for a long time. But, you know, when I met up with him and I said, you know, how did your entrepreneurial, you know, flair started? You know, that was a 45-minute, you know, conversation answer from him.
Now
45
you know,
minutes.
So now you know how it feels like talking to you.
No. I condense, man. Condense, distill.
But you were engaged throughout the whole 45 minutes, sure.
Of course. It's an amazing story, right? So he gives this anecdote which I shared in the article also that his dad said that, you know, if you give, his dad would tell friends and family, if you give Paramjit, I think, 2 ringgit or was it 50 cents? I can't remember now. It's an article in the first paragraph. You know, he'll come back at the end of the day with like, you know, with 5 ringgit. And then he said, if you give another son, you know, the same 2 ringgit, he'll be walking home. And I said, and he was still a teenager when the dad already saw the potential. He's been doing so many entrepreneurial ventures at such a young age and amazing. You should sit down with him and just your jaw will drop. So what's beautiful is that he got into the education space, and that's why the headline is one of my favorite headlines. He's amplifying his passion 1,000-fold because students, I think, who go to APU, and even he and his one of his key lieutenants, Gurpreet, Pardeep mentioned that a lot of the students end up becoming entrepreneurs out there, and they wonder why, and maybe it's because of the aura or the drive of, you know, Dr. Paramjit too, right? He infuses it. That's why I say he's amplifying his passion 1,000. Because I asked him, what is your passion? He said, I think my passion is entrepreneurship itself. And I think if you, and I asked him about revenue models, he said, I think if you work on your passion, right, the revenue will come later.
So you'll find a way somehow with the
passion. Find a way, yeah. So you know, and APU is fantastic, right? They're change agents. You know, students come through there. They come out being very entrepreneurial minded. Mm. You know, and the employability on graduation is probably one of the highest, if not the highest in the country, right? Of course, they are very much a engineering and you know, an IT university, but they've also now got business courses and all. And they've maintained that high employability on graduation. Mm. Maybe because a lot of them are self-employed, I don't know.
Mm. And Patrick Grove.
Patrick Grove, okay lah. What more can you say about Patrick Grove?
Was I could he have on the lab 2 years ago as well?
Yeah, he's the only three-peat, right? He's the only three-peat. So maybe when we have our Digirati 50 cocktail, thanks to sponsors and Dimension, you know, Data, who's going to give them a Tour de France jersey by each of the current batch only. One of the past batch was a bit disappointed. You mean I'm not getting a jersey? I said, with your belly, maybe there's a blessing in disguise. Say, don't change the topic around there. No, but only the current batch. Because these are expensive when you have to order them custom, you know, and they're coming from France. So we're going to have a nice cocktail to invite them over. But in terms of...
Patrick.
Patrick, you know, yeah. So I'm probably going to maybe get him a hoodie, right? Which says Patrick's hat trick. That should have been the headline. But what more can you say about him? You know, so I think my team was making fun of me. Hey, Karam, you seem to be a fanboy of Patrick's. So I said, no, I'm not. It's just that you've seen him grow, right? Because I've been covering the space in year 2000, right? You've seen him in his catcher days when actually Nick Lim, he's one of the five co-founders, was the front face, right, of the company. Patrick was behind. Then, you know, when the company didn't do well, it almost was dying. They went into magazines and how he moved on. And now he's creating such an impact. Now he's KL Internet City and the DFTZ also was part of his brainchild. Mm-hmm. Immense contribution. And he's got this bole spirit, right? He says, hey, you know, I love the Malaysia's bole spirit. I know a lot of us Malaysians, especially, you know, a lot of us like to use it in a cynical way, right? Ah, yeah. But
inspiring to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, Patrick
him
uses it in
it.
A positive way. I love the bole spirit of Malaysians. And he always says that this is absolutely the best place in Southeast Asia to launch your internet business from. Because Malaysians are very good first adopters on a consumer level too. So what more can you say? He's inspiring people, and I hope that he infects a lot more Malaysians. By right, we should have a lot more, you know, crazy successful entrepreneurs out there, because Patrick has set the stage, right?
Okay. And so there's a lot more entrepreneurs here, so people can again.
You go to our homepage, right up there on the top right. You can download. You know, we ask you to fill in a short questionnaire, because we're going to capture some reader data also, and then you'll get a link sent to you. But because it's the first time, I should clarify that you're probably going to get this email coming in with a link. You look in your spam folder, right? Didn't know you're shaking your head. So, right, Zoff, correct, right? So, you got to be aware and check in your spam folder, because quite a few people saying it's in their spam folder. So, just to be aware of that. Okay, that's just the nature of you first time getting an email
a
link.
You can also get the physical copy.
Yeah, physical copy is in the current issue of Focus Malaysia. Yeah.
Okay, which is out today.
Oh, it came out last week, Friday. Yeah.
Today is the last day then.
Oh, yeah. Today is Thursday, yeah, because tomorrow is the new issue coming out.
So if you want the hard copy, you either go and get your Focus Malaysia copy or just hunt Karam down.
Just hunt me down, and then I've got some extra copies that we are selling. But it's great. So the one meaningful thing you can do this whole year is to go to DNA's homepage and download Digirati 50 for these inspiring stories out there, right?
It may sound hard sell. It may sound hard sell, but it's actually very inspiring, because there are 50 entrepreneurs here that are shaping
slightly
the
more
country.
Than 50, because co-founders also, right?
Exactly. There are 50 companies or organizations.
Individually, 54 actually. Yeah.
So 54.
But it's not sexy to put 54. Right? Put 50 lah.
Yeah. So 50 people that are inspiring and changing Malaysia and also the region
and
the world.
Yeah. Exactly.
South, right, so go and get your copy. It's really it's a really good read over for the weekend as well. Yeah. We'll come back and we'll talk about one more story after this. BFM 89.9,
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9,
and we're on the last show for the last part of Tech Thursday for the 10 o'clock show with Digital News Asia, with Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasevam, Chon Jin Seung, and also Zof Azmi. Zof, you did an article about the GDPR, or the General Data Protection Resolution Act, that's in effect in EU. But businesses here in Malaysia, if they're dealing with any EU residents or consumers from that region, it's time for them to like relook at their Data Privacy Protection Act or something like that?
Yes. So I think because the GDPR is something that was is a piece of legislation enacted by the European Union, most companies outside of Europe may think that I don't have to affect them. Yeah,
correct. Dangerous.
And the reason why it's dangerous to assume that is because the legislation is there to protect individuals within Europe. So if you are, for example, a company that has a website and you are selling stuff to citizens in Europe, you will be affected by the GDPR.
Wow.
And it's not just that. If you're a company that's taking analytics or analyzing the behavior of users. So we're not even talking about selling goods and services, right? We're going one step a bit more abstract. You would fall under the GDPR as well. Mm. Now,
this practically means quite a lot of people, though, yeah. right?
Yes, you would think so. I mean, because the law only comes into effect on May the 25th, if I got that correct, May the 25th of this year. So it's not in effect now. And how it will be implemented is yet to be seen. Mm. But I think the thing that should make people and companies sit up and take notice is what the penalties will be. Mm. Because they have determined a maximum fine. So in the worst case scenario, if you breach this, what will happen is that there is a maximum fine of either 20 million euros
wow.
or 4% of your income.
Wow.
Not yeah. your profit.
Wow.
Your income. And that is a...
Whichever is higher, right?
Whichever is higher, yes. Whichever is higher. And that's a fairly large number.
Can you imagine them going after Google?
And so what is the reason for me, you know, being in the wrong side? What are we doing now that, you know, they've decided to do this, and what can I not do anymore come May 25th?
So the perhaps the saving grace, if you want to call it that, is that somebody needs to register a complaint before the
action.
Various parties will take action. But where the companies that I think would be most impacted by this in the short term are companies that have business contracts or supply deals with organizations in Europe. So if you're a subcontractor to a company in Europe, you will probably already have a clause in the subcontract that says you have to